We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to another episode of The Pod is the Roof. I am your host, Jacob Karabatsis, joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Riley Davis. Now, Riley, the Heels are 2-0.
Yes, we are.
I'm not sure how we feel about it yet. It's been an interesting couple games, kind of playing with our food a little bit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Not like we like to see. But we're gonna talk about that. So we're gonna pay some homage to, if you listen to the mismatch with KOC and Chris Vernon, they play That's True, That Might Be True, or That's Not True at All. We're gonna play That's an Issue, That Might Be an Issue, or That's Not an Issue at All. And then we're gonna have our four corners, and we're not gonna do an in-depth preview against Riverside because, you know, UNC has a 96% chance to win that game. So we're doing full previews against Riverside, I don't think it'd be a very long one anyways. But Riley, how we doing, man? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was great, man. It was great. Yeah, Friday night was able to be courtside at Duke in Arizona alongside Jeff Goodman and Rob Doster. Watching a game with Jeff Goodman was everything that I expected it to be and more. Now, my man was housing a box of Sour Patch Kids. It was great. We were.
Is he biased towards his alma mater? That's what I want to
know. No, he's not. I will give it to Goodman, like, very much is in reporter mode, like, did not cheer for Arizona at all. Like, if I was in his shoes, I don't think I would have been able to hide at least a little bit of excitement. But he you would have thought he had no connection to either school. But it was great hanging out with Goodman. I'll go ahead and say it. He's an elite hang. Good to see Doster as well. Trying to think of any other funny anecdotes with those two. Brian Ralph was there with me too, a fellow Heat Check contributor. Just fun to see an excellent college basketball game. Fun to see Caleb Love go out on top and Cameron finish with a 3-1 record. And, afterwards, after the game, he and Keshad Johnson were outside the Arizona locker room talking to reporters. And Caleb gave some great answers about his feelings about UNC, said he's a Tar Heel for life, no matter what any differences he might have had with anybody within the program. Keshad Johnson, also a great interview. Just this Arizona team was really fun to watch. So great way to spend a Friday night. And Saturday, got to watch the Heels beat Duke in football, which I'm not going to act like it was a fun watch, but I'm glad we got the win.
Yeah, it's we won't even talk about that. I'm just convinced at this point that you could quite literally bring a senior quarterback from a Charlotte 4A high school on the field against UNC, and they would put up some numbers. this man... Duke's third string freshman quarterback looked like an absolute, like, joke against Wake Forest. Now, they won the game, but he looked like a joke against Wake Forest, who is an awful football team this year. And he comes out and looks like he's going to be a first-round draft pick in 2 years when he plays against UNC. It's really frustrating that every single elite quarterback in the nation right now has an absolutely piss-poor defense. Shadur's defense, terrible. Drake May's defense, terrible. Caleb Williams' defense, terrible. But
Michael Penix, Bo Nix. Nix has a decent defense.
I mean, you can even go down the line, like Spencer Rattler's having a great season. South Carolina can't stop anybody. So it's
had no idea Spencer Rattler was having a good season.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, you kind of saw it like in that first game against UNC, threw for like 360 yards.
They right.
Could not.
Right.
They could not get a stop. But yeah, it's tough, man.
Yeah, it was frustrating. Again, I know it's not a Carolina football pod, but you know, I'm sure there's a lot of overlap with the people who listen to this show and where their football loyalties lie. It just frustrated me how like it took till the first overtime to finally play with some like aggressiveness in the defensive play calling, where you know, we had a couple tackles for losses and finally broke up some passes, and it just kind of felt like, where was this in the second half? You know, like we should have won this game an hour ago and I should be in bed right now.
Yep.
But instead I'm up past midnight by myself getting mad.
Yeah, so I think it's actually a fun tie-in, the football and the basketball teams, because I think a lot of their issues are the same in the sense that the defense, obviously you're not changing personnel in a basketball game to play defense, right, to play offense. Right. However, the issue is that the offenses of both programs are so elite that the defense gets a weak mindset and is like, our offense can score whenever, like, we don't really have to play physical, you know. So it's tough. I mean, it sucks to watch. But I did want to ask before we move on, you know, you gave the anecdote about Arizona and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering how it felt to get to, you know, be that close and that personal to the owner of Duke. How did that feel?
You know, it was pretty special. It was fun getting to like hear all the jeers that like the Cameron crazies were letting them have it. So I've probably been at 5 or 6 games in Cameron, and like with the media pass there, you are courtside. I have a challenge to the Cameron crazies to step up their game a little bit. There's one kid, I don't have no idea if you'll hear this, named Michael, who was very nice to me, even when I told him I was a UNC grad. So shout out, Michael. You're my favorite Duke student out there. but yeah, they were letting Caleb hear it. My main challenge to the Cameron crazies is like right after Duke lost, it seemed like they were sad for like 30 seconds and then moved on from it very quickly. Like, where's the passion? Where's the investment, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I was happy to see Caleb get a win, just especially hearing some of the chants he had to endure all night. But it was also funny, like, some of the people were asking him after the game, like some of the reporters were saying, was this worse than when you were at North Carolina? And he, without hesitation, he goes, no, not at all. Like,
oh,
this, like the stuff I heard here was, he was like, is no worse by any stretch than like what he heard when he was at UNC. So it was really funny just to hear his answers. And he just had like a big smirk on his face. It's like, yeah. And he's like, I was just waving bye to them. That's all I did. I was just waving bye to them. So
yeah, it's I think it was Goodman posted a picture of their chant sheet, and even my guy Duke Better quoted it and was like, we got to step these up. We got to change these. So
yeah.
I need to see it. All right. So before we get into our concerns or issues, if you will, I'll let you go first, but I did want you, before you give your first issue, to explain in the latest heat check poll, you do not have UNC in the top 25, which I do understand in a way, but then it's like, you know, Villanova loses to Penn, Miami escapes Florida International, so it's like there's a couple teams you had in there that have clinched or taken victories from the jaws of defeat, if you will, whereas at least UNC has won comfortably.
Right, yeah, and I think, barring a collapse at Riverside, I'll rank UNC next week. I think both. I have St. Mary's. I ranked them before they lost to Weber State. Ranked Villanova before they lost to Penn. Both of those two will be out, especially Nova. Like, I had Nova 25th anyway, and they have some good pieces. I just don't know how well they fit. With Carolina, my stance going into the season was I see them somewhere in like the 25 to 35 range. I like a lot of the pieces. I think they're set at the 1 and 5 between RJ and Armando, but I need to see them prove it a little bit. I need to see a little some consistency. And even going into the Radford game and the Lehigh game to an extent, you know, the Radford game, my mentality was like, hey, I'm kind of expecting Radford to make a run here and there to keep it a little bit close, just because like we talked about last week, Radford has some legit guards and they're well coached and they have some legitimate size in the front court too. And I was thinking, like, if UNC jumps out to a 15-20 point lead in the first half, I'm going to feel so great about this. Didn't happen. Still won comfortably. Still felt relatively good. Low concern after the Radford win. But I really wanted to see them jump on Lehigh from the start and, again, go up 20 points in the first half or something. They got close to that. They went up 15 at one point in the first half and largely kept them at bay. It was just a couple of defensive lapses. And they let it get – the offense stagnated a little bit in the second half to where, again – winning by 22 points is nothing to turn your nose up to. You know, that's a good win. Lehigh is not a great team by any stretch. They play in the Patriot League, which is sort of dominated by Colgate. But they are, I know they're expected to be like a top three team in their league. So they're not like the worst team in the country, but I would have liked to see them extend the lead to 20 points in the first half and not really be pushed in the second like they were for the first few minutes. That would have fully convinced me. But at the same time, like you said, Jacob, you look around the country, there's a lot of teams being tested by mid-majors right now. Like Arkansas got pushed by Gardner-Webb, and then they got challenged well into the game against Old Dominion, and Gardner-Webb gave Baylor fits as well. Like a lot of teams, especially in the portal era, are still figuring out, especially defensively, I think. And I would say UNC is in that same type of, like, that stage of identity development. So, yeah, I think they're a top 25 team. I'm convinced, like, I definitely would take Carolina over a few teams. I was just sort of being stubborn and, to a lesser extent, not wanting to get my hopes up in case they flopped again. But, yeah.
I mean, I get it. I understand the PTSD and wanting to see it. And honestly, like, I'm not mad about it because there is a world in which, you know, they're going to be 3-0. But, like, We'll find out how good they are during Atlantis. That's when we'll see how good they really are, because that could be a brutal wake up call, or it could be like, oh, they're actually like a top 15 team. So I mean,
right?
It's gonna go one of two ways, and I feel like it's gonna be an extreme either way. It's gonna be like an extreme overreaction of like they might not be good, or it's gonna be a overreaction of, oh my God, this team could win the ACC. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But I do, yeah. I think if they go 3-0 and then win their first two games in Atlantis, they probably,
I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'll be happy. They stay in the top 25, and then they get a really, really good Tennessee team after that. So, that's going to be an absolute backbreaker.
If we win Atlantis, I'm going to be insufferable on this pod. Well, I guess not for UNC fans. We'll all feel the same, but I'm going to be insufferable on Twitter chirping about how we're back. But yeah, I do think there was a lot, even with like, I don't want to say, even frustrations feels a little extreme with these first two games. Cause I do think generally like they're feeling out rotations and they're getting on the same page defensively. And once that happens, it's going to look a lot more cohesive from start to finish. So even amid some like minor frustrations, I think there's been a lot to feel encouraged about in these first two games. And I can share some about Lehigh, what I saw that I really liked. If you want me to start, or we can kind of bounce off each other with that. But the first is that like RJ Davis is good enough to win you a game by himself. I thought what was really noticeable, I'm sure the coaching staff realizes this too, you know, second half offense stagnated a little bit. Lehigh was able to cut a double digit lead to 3, and it seemed like Carolina just immediately was like, all right, it's time to go pick and roll with RJ and Armando, and our RJ just started cooking. And I think I'm curious to see what sort of template that sets going forward. Cause I know UNC, like Hubert, has talked about bringing the secondary break back, and we're seeing Carolina run those like secondary type sets a lot more after they push the pace. But ultimately, you know, the best version of this team, it includes a lot of pick and roll with RJ. It includes a lot of pick and roll with Elliott. And it, in my opinion, like the way that they were dropping against, it was like anytime they ran a high ball screen with RJ, he got to his mid-range shot, which has just been money. I think he hit 3 threes as well and a couple off the bounce. Like he can take this team far. So yeah, that was one of the main things that I saw that I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, RJ is thriving in this like sort of alpha role in the backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, they both had 22. They both shot 8 of 14 from the field. Like, it's they are, it goes without saying, I think they're one of the best duos in college basketball. I mean, they've been there for a long time. They're both talented. And, you know, the biggest thing that stands out to me when I watch this team play compared to last year's team is Armando has unlimited space. Teams are actually having to send true doubles now. Like, last year, you could leave certain guys open. You could leave Leaky. Most of the time felt like you could leave Nance. So it was like, you know, it was easier to double. Armando really, like, he's getting one-on-ones in the post now. And if he's not, they're having to double off with, like, Cormac's guy or Ingram's guy. And you're leaving someone who can knock down a shot open. And it's boding really well for Armando's game, and I have a take on that, but we'll save that for later because it's pretty spicy. But I do want to get into that's an issue, that's not an issue, or that might be an issue. And the first one, you might not like it, you might like it. Paxton Wojcik, all right? I haven't been impressed, I'm going to be honest. He was passing up shots in the first game, and then I think we saw, like, in Sunday's game, when he's not hitting shots, he really can't be on the court. I mean, he played less minutes than Trimble, Withers, and Cadeau. I don't think that's a coincidence. And he played the same amount of minutes as Aiden High. They made a lot of their runs with Paxton off the floor. So, you know, Paxton being in the rotation, do you think, you know, not him being in the rotation, but Paxton Wojcik not ending up being a key guy, do you think that's an issue, that's not an issue, or that might be an issue?
You know, I'd say that's not an issue, just because, like, he can give you 5 to 12 minutes. You know, I know he played 12 minutes this game. That might go down to, yeah, the 5 to 10 range. I know we talked about it last week, but I'd love to see him take some more of those open shots. Hubert himself said he has the green light, and there was, I think, one play in transition where Cadeau got him the ball for what would have been a transition three, and he kind of pump faked and passed it. And and I think Withers might have even had one too, where a very similar type of play where he passed it back to Cadeau. I don't know. Both those guys were brought in because of their ability to shoot, and especially against a team like Lehigh that you have a talent advantage over, you have a size and athleticism advantage over, you can make up for, like, even if you miss the three, there's a decent chance we're getting the offensive rebound. So yeah, maybe those guys are still sort of filling out their roles as newcomers and aren't wanting to take a bad shot or something that could be deemed a bad shot and get pulled, especially if they're trying to keep steady minutes off the bench. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's an issue. Mainly, I mean, this would even tie into another positive I have based on how good Seth Trimble looked on Sunday. He looked really good. Like, he looked capable of a 15 to 20 minute role. And I hope, like, I want to see him get 20 minutes a game. Maybe that's a little, you got to be creative with some of the lineups you put around him. Like, I think you got to have preferably both RJ and Cormac on the floor with him because teams can sag off him because he's not a proven shooter yet. But yeah, his defense is, like, just game changing. In both games, he's, again, with the caveat that's against mid-major competition, but he's had two really nice blocks where it seemed like a defender got him, that his man got him on his hip, but it was like, no, sorry, I'm faster, bigger, and I can jump higher, and I'm going to swat this as soon as the ball gets up.
Oh, yeah, and I think he has to be in the rotation, especially when you get into these brutal games and you get past the competition, because I'm not even going to go into non-com, but if you just look at conference play, he is the guy who's going to have to guard Reese Beekman. He's the guy who's going to have to guard Proctor or McCain. He's the guy who's going to have to guard Cleveland or Wuga Poplar. He's the guy that's going to have to guard Judah Mintz. Like, there's no one else that can step up to the task on the perimeter like he can. Like, I think in conference play, he's going to be one of, like, the X factor guys. So seeing him play well was really, really a great sight to see. Your issue question. I know we have a lot of positives, but I also know you definitely have some issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll say UNC's inability to get around screens. Whether off ball, yeah, primarily of the off ball variety.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if like it's one of two things. This is either a schematic thing where like that I hate and that needs to change, or it is them just not communicating on the defensive side of the ball at all. Like, they won the game and only gave up 68 points, but Lehigh shot 39% from three, and that's because on off-ball screens, there's so much confusion. Like, you watch a team, like I watched Arizona, what they did against Duke. The communication was on point. Like, they switched. If Ryan Young was on the floor, they knew they were going to sag off and play ball denial and let the center kind of sit at right inside of the free throw line. UNC's defensive cohesion just doesn't seem to be there. It's like, if you're going to go way under ball screens, then you either have to have the guy who's there hedge, or you have to switch. Like, you have to commit. And at this point, if they are going to be slow on rotations and if they are going to struggle with communication, I would soon rather them just switch everything. And at the end of the day, if it ends up with RJ being on a big or Armando being on a guard, I would rather see them give up twos than continue to give up wide open threes. So I would say that is a big issue that I had watching them.
Maybe this is a little too optimistic, but I'm just going to say that might be an issue. Because I think the way we've defended ball screens, it's been, you know, there have been some hard hedging and there's been a lot of switching, and they went under a couple times, but I didn't see a ton of going under. I kind of wonder if some of the, well, yeah, I definitely think the screen navigation might be an issue. And right now it probably is an issue with the miscommunications. And it's like, even, you know, not to single guys out, but Cormack, like, he struggled getting around some screens, and he's the veteran, you know, he's supposed to be like the, one of the steadying presences there. And it seemed like in that case, it just has to be miscommunication. Like, Cormack has the length, he has the athleticism to get around a screen, to where I think that just needs to be like more in sync with the guys on the court. But I wonder if part of it was the scheme against Lehigh. Like, Lehigh shot 7 for 29 from three against Cornell, and then they shot 3 for 13 from three against Penn State, to where maybe the plan was to try to take away the rim, because they shot 4 for 17 on layups. Yeah. We did a good job protecting the basket. And even, like, you know, forced a decent amount of mid-range shots. I guess if I was going to continue to have any gripe, it would be, I'd still want to see a little more intensity on the defensive end. And I hate blaming it on that, because I don't want to question any player's effort. You know, I think they all love the game, and sometimes I feel like it's easy for us as media to be like, oh, they need to play harder, especially when it can be tough, especially from an outside perspective, to discern what is like effort or intensity based versus what is like a schematic issue or just certain limitations guys might have athletically or like physical, as far as like their physical profile is. So yeah, I don't want to say that, but at the same time, like, just watching Purdue and Xavier last night, Braden Smith, he had one closeout where he was sprinting into the corner from the paint to close out on a guy in the corner. And it was like an all out sprint, and he leapt into the air and altered the shot. And like, this is Braden Smith, who's not a plus athlete. Like, he's 6'1", maybe 6'2" tops. Like, and to see that type of effort, I was like, oh, I would like to see our closeouts be a little more like that, where it seems like sometimes UNC so far has been just a touch late, whether it's getting a hand up or something like that to any of the closeouts.
Yeah, it's like, I think that the issue for me really, like, it's not necessarily how they play the screens. Like, you're going to play them how you're going to play them and how they're schemed, but it's just the communication. Like, you can just tell there's a complete lapse in communication sometimes. Like, I just, you know, that's the thing for me. It's like, they've honestly done a good job protecting the rim this year. Like, even in the Radford game, Radford shot well in the 2-point range, but it was mostly middies. Like,
yeah,
they're not really getting abused inside. And I think that's because they do have four bigs that can play in the rotation and defend the rim. So I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about that, but that's my thing, man. Just like get the communication up. I don't know if it's the fact that, like, you know, Armando and RJ are the leaders. Those are the guys that I want to see like maximum communication from, like not just on the offensive end. Like, you know, Mondo's the center. That's the easiest position to kind of navigate and communicate where guys need to be. So that's really kind of the next step that I want to see. This kind of ties into what you said, though. It's my last issue, of course, on the defensive end. We have seen guards at the mid-major level in the first two games play very, very well against UNC. I mean, Higgins, he had a good game, 16-3-3, 7-13 from the field. We saw it in the first game with Radford. Do you think opposing guard play is going to be an issue? It might be an issue, or it isn't an issue at all?
I'll go that might be an issue again. You know, I think I've said this on here before, that RJ gets a little bit of an unfair, what's the word I'm looking for? An unfair reputation when it comes to his defense. He's someone who does play with a lot of intensity on that end. And I think he can be opportunistic with getting steals, and he's going to battle. He's just like 6 feet tall, you know, and probably doesn't have like a plus wingspan. And, but it seems like he's in the right position a lot of times, and he'll get a hand up. It's not like he's mailing it in, and he's for the most part not like getting caught on the off ball screens. But yeah, just until as Cadeau gets more and more comfortable, that probably will be an issue until, I mean, maybe all season, but maybe until once we get into the heart of conference play and everybody's a little more adjusted to their role and everything.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM Sportsbook for this college basketball season. We're going to be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks and predictions throughout the college basketball season. And we are going to have special offers for you, the listeners and the viewers on the Field of 68, each and every week during the season. If you haven't signed up with BetMGM yet, use the bonus code FIELD1500 and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager on BetMGM Sportsbook. Here's what you got to do. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD1500. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if that bet loses. Just make sure you use the bonus code FIELD1500 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient for me when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly. When cross the state borders, just log into your existing account instead of having to create new accounts in each state that you go to. And most importantly, I got to let you know, we do have some fun stuff coming up for this college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boosts, my personal favorite, parlay odds boosts. So download the BetMGM app today.
Yeah, I think they can figure it out. I mean, I'll be honest, like I haven't even had like a qualm with RJ. Like I think he's been really good through the first two games on both ends. I think where I'm having the issue is like people are basically hunting the Paxson mismatch when he's in the lineup, and he tries. You know, Cormack's a way better defender than Paxson is, though, and that's just kind of – that's where I think starting Paxson is going to be tough, and I genuinely do think once it gets down to the nitty-gritty, you're going to start Cadeau in some games, and then there's going to be some games where they start Trimble because of matchup and they want to play better defense. It hasn't even been RJ for me. It's just been, you know, Paxson's really the only mismatch they hunt. Other than that, I think it all ties back to the communication. Like, guards are getting good looks because guys are getting lost on picks. It's like, you know, there's just nothing there. And I think it's also a little bit of PTSD because let's just be honest, like the last, God, this, we could probably trace this back for a while, but the last, we'll just say, 4 years to be generous, like anytime there's a guard who is a shot creator, they kill UNC historically. And I don't know, like, I'm not asking you to shut somebody down. Like, I know Leaky Black's not walking out that locker room door. Trust me, I know that. But I'm just asking to make their life hard. Like, you know, the first test we're probably going to get is assuming we can win the first game in Atlantis, we're going to play Villanova. Like, most likely, I would assume they'll beat Texas Tech, but they might not. They just lost a Penn. If they do,
I kind of think Tech gets that one done.
If they do play Villanova, it's like I expect Justin Moore to like play well, but like I don't want to see Justin Moore get 10 easy shots. That's the biggest thing. Like just make the opposing guards work for it. Do you have any last issue or anything before you surprise me with your four corners?
Yeah, let's talk 3-point shooting a little bit, just because it was fine. Radford looked great in the first half against Radford, tailed off in the second. And this past one, I think the final percentage was like 4 for 15 or something, or 5 for 16 or 5 for 17, but that included a banked in shot from Rob Landry, walk on. also, I gotta say, I kind of think sometimes the shot creating guard is a little bit overblown with killing UNC in losses. Yeah, but Carolina's won a lot of games over the years. Maybe.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's just like
it does feel like the all losses are like any sort of upset loss or a loss to an inferior opponent usually follows the same template.
Exactly, it's like the same formula. like make someone change up the blend. It's like, you know, they stole the Krabby Patty formula. They've got it, and that's how you beat UNC. It's like, man, make them do something else.
Right. And I guess it happened again. I love Roy. I'm not critiquing Roy, but I kind of think back to the 2016 game against Kentucky when Malik Monk had 47. Or even last year when Caleb Grill dropped like 30 plus in, where was it? The PK 85, where, you know, against Monk, it was like going under screens or helping off of him. And even that game with Caleb Grill, I think some of our guys got caught on off ball screens or helped off the corner, and Grill saw his first like 3 or 4 shots go in and just like, all right, it's on. You know, that is a formula that has plagued UNC before. I'll acknowledge that. But yeah,
it's annoying, man. Like, don't even get me started. It's just, you know. Let me see something different.
Let's talk the shooting though. If that's, you think that's a concern, might be a concern, or it's not a concern.
I'm gonna say it might be a concern. Obviously, Cadeau hasn't really hit his stride yet in terms of shooting. I think he will. I don't think he's ever gonna be a guy that takes, you know, 18 shots a game, but
right,
like, I think he'll hit his stride because he's getting good looks. He's not like taking a lot of bad shots. Obviously, you know, Paxson, he's been a little bit afraid to shoot. Cormac didn't shoot well against Lehigh. So it's like no one really shot well besides RJ and Armando. I will say it might be an issue, but the reason I'm leaning towards, like, we look back at this 2 months from now and it's not one, is because they're generating good looks.
Right.
They're just not always going in. Like, you know, I'm fine with Ingram being 1 of 3. Like, if Ingram can shoot mid 30s, like, I'll be happy. Like, I don't expect him to shoot 45% from three. I think it ultimately comes down to like Cormac's getting good looks. I'm telling you, he's going to go on like an 8-game stretch at some point in this season where with the looks he's getting, he's probably going to go on like an 8-game stretch where he shoots 55%. Like, that's going to happen. RJ remains consistent. I mean, he shot 37% last year. That might go up. Like, it might, because he's getting better shots. Right. I mean, shoot, even a guy like Jalen Withers, like, he's getting good looks. Like, I trust
he hasn't taken a three yet.
Like, that's what I'm saying. He's been so patient. Like, he's getting good looks inside. He's taken a few jump shots. Obviously, hasn't taken a three yet. But like, I trust him to come in when we get down to the bulk of the schedule, and, you know, probably get 1 to 2 open looks from the corner of the wing, and he's probably going to hit one of them. So it's like. Yeah. I'm not too worried about the 3-point shooting, but at the same time, I do think this is going to be a thing where when this team loses, I think we're going to look at the game and look at the box score and see a really bad 3-point percentage.
Yeah. Because, I mean, again, like we've talked about how the defensive ceiling, you know, even though we think some of it will be fixed with communication, hopefully over the course of the season, defensive ceiling is a bit capped to where any big time game against a good opponent, UNC is probably going to need to hit at least 7 threes. If I had to guess, you probably want to be closer to 8, 9, or 10. There's part of me that feels like it might be an issue. I think Cormack's going to hit his shots. RJ's going to hit his shots. Hopefully Cadeau can get there. It looks like there's a slight hitch in his jumper. Like, I don't know if that's like overthinking it, because I don't really remember seeing that in any of his high school games or anything. I'm confident he can become a competent shooter. But, you know, there's a little bit of fear that Ingram can regress back to like the low 30s or something, or that Wojcik never, you know, maybe defense, he can't stay on the floor, or he never gets confident in his role, or that Withers has the regression. A lot of guys I feel confident in, but some of it too, it might be an issue, because I think you want guys like both Zayden High and Seth Trimble on the floor. And I think to maximize them, you got to have some shooters around them. But like, if you put Seth on the floor again, you just get it. The spacing could be an issue until Cadeau proves himself. If you play him with RJ and Cadeau or something, or even if you play I think Carolina ran like a Trimble, Cadeau, and Ingram lineup out there. Maybe it was Withers and Washington in the front court. Where again, Withers has a year where he shot well, and Washington theoretically can make threes, but it's just, I feel like so few of those guys are unproven from beyond the arc that you can still just sort of pack the paint and take Carolina out of its offensive rhythm.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, when they lose, they're probably going to shoot bad, but I also think the illusion of shooting will help them a lot. Like, they don't have a lot of guys that you feel comfortable with leaving open, even if they're not hitting their shots that night. No one is ever going to say, we'll leave Cormack wide open, we'll leave Ingram wide open, we'll leave Jalen Withers wide open. No one's ever going to do that. So it's like, the illusion of shooting will prevent anyone from, I think, fully ever packing the paint against UNC, which helps a lot, because there was times last year where we ran lineups where people would pack the paint and it wasn't fun. So, I mean, yeah, it's good. I think the having guys who can shoot is what's making Armando's life so easy, because at least if you are struggling and you miss two looks back to back trips, you can get it to Armando in a one-on-one opportunity. And that's what I wanted to say before we get into our last stuff. Armando's got an Npoy campaign cooking, man. Look, you got to have a high usage rate and you got to do some stuff to match Edie, because he's everything to Purdue basically. Mm-hmm. But through two games, statistically, he's there. Like,
he's balling.
I mean, so what, like, if you were going scale of 1 to 10, chances that he finishes in the top three at the end of the year of the Npoy race, what's the number?
Oh man, like, how confident am I on a scale of 1 to 10?
How confident are you on the scale
like
of
1 to 6? Which is not what I was expecting a month ago. Like, I would have probably said like a 3 a month ago. No shade toward Armando, but it's just hard to win as a big man. It's like, maybe it's not that hard because Oscar Tshiebwe and Zach Edey both are like our last two national players of the year. But yeah, sometimes I feel like with Tshiebwe, people get tired of like rebounding stats. Like, it's like, oh cool, you got 20 rebounds. That's not flashy, to where that would probably work. That's like Armando's biggest gift probably. But after how he's looked through two games, I mean, he's currently third in KenPom's player of the year rankings right now. But like, honestly, part of why I'd say I'm up to like a 6 or a 7, he's 11 for 12 from the free throw line.
Yeah.
He's a 91% shooter. Hey, get this. So he's shooting 62% from the field. He's 0 for 1 from 3 right now. But if he can just go 1 for 2 on the year, or 2 for 5 on the year from 3, and have a, if he has a 60-40 60-40-90 season.
Listen, if he's going to shoot, if he's going to shoot anything above 80% from the free throw line, if he leads the nation in rebounding, which it's looking like he might, to be honest with you, granted it's against smaller mid-major teams, but still, we've already seen him do this against big time competition. And if he can average, like right now he's averaging 23.5 and 16.5 on insane percentages. Like, I think it really just comes down to UNC's team success. If he's averaging 23 and 15 at the end of the year on 60-40-85 splits.
I love that we're just throwing 40% three-point.
Yeah, like 40. I mean, because he's not going to take
five. That's all we need. All we need is three.
He's not going to take a lot, but
hit your two threes and call it a day.
Exactly. And
don't attempt another one.
If he does that, it's ultimately going to come down to like, all right, let's say Edie's averaging 22 and 14 on crazy efficiency, but Purdue is like the number one team in the nation, and UNC's like 14th, they're going to give it to Edie.
Yeah, right.
That's where he's at a disadvantage, because I don't know if UNC is a good enough team to boost it, but I'd say I'm at like a 6 just because the dude's – I would say he's a lock unless he gets injured to be a first-team All-American. I'll go that far. Like,
it feels really likely so far. Yes.
It feels like him, Edie, and Filipowski are all –
yeah,
going to be first team all
Americans. Yeah, yeah, that does feel very close to a lock.
Yeah, so I mean, I just had to say that before we get on.
Yeah,
quickly before you move into your surprise four corners, do you have any thoughts or predictions that you want to throw out against UC Riverside? We can give score predictions just to see which one of us is more right at the end of the week.
I think it's the Elliott Cadeau breakout game. I bet we see like 17 points, 6 assists. And hopefully at least one made three. And I think Carolina wins by 25. So I'll say they win 92 to whatever 92 minus 25 is.
Jesus Christ, the UNC education. 67, if you weren't aware. But,
thank you. Not a math guy at all.
I think Cadeau will play well. I think we get another 20-20 from Baycott. And if he plays enough minutes, Jesus. And then I think this is the game we finally see what you and I have been wanting to see, foot on the gas. I think they come out and blow the doors off UC Riverside. I'm going to say that they come a few points shy of the Biscuits, and they win 97-70. That's my my final score prediction. So I'm hyped for this four corners, though. I'm hyped for this.
Yeah, let's get into four corners. If there's any sponsors out there who want to sponsor this segment, please hit us up. It's four corners. It's our favorite segment where we talk about really four factoids, four shout outs, four anything. Can cover a range of topics. Today, I want to hear, Jacob. Well, people listening might not know this, but you consider yourself a bit of a film aficionado.
Yes.
In cinema. Let me get your top four movies in 2023.
Oh, so, God. See, all right. This is a tough one.
I'm giving you 2 minutes. You can't just deliberate it. You got to go rapid
fire. If you're a fellow cinephile, as they call it, hit me up on Letterboxd, J. Carabatsis. I'll be leaving them reviews. Number one, easy peasy lemon squeezy, Oppenheimer. Absolutely classic. It's Christopher Nolan's magnum opus. It's nuts. And yeah, he's my favorite director of all time. Number two, my second favorite director of all time, Killers of the Flower Moon by Scorsese. Oppenheimer edges it out because there were some points in Killers of the Flower Moon that were a bit drawn out. But all in all, it was an incredible story. Yes, it's very long. It's lengthy, but it's emotion packed. They actually filmed it on site of the Osage tribe. So nuts. Number three, I literally just watched a few days ago. And that is from one of my top like eight favorite directors, David Fincher. He just released The Killer on Netflix. Very, very elite cinema.
It's awesome. I'm ready to watch that.
Oh, it's so good. And it's got like that self-narration vibe where every time he goes after a victim, he says like the same thing to himself. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to spoil anything. What I will say though is good luck on the Wordle. You'll get it when you watch the movie. But Number four, this one took me by surprise. I did not, you know, God, this one's a tie. I don't know how I'm going to deliberate this, but oh God. It's between, you know what? I'm just going to say it. This one, I got to give it to Into the Spider-Verse, man. Like, that is one of the best animated movies I've ever seen. It was absolutely incredible. It could be higher than fourth, honestly, but I just don't even put animated films and real films on the same playing field. But they take their time, man. Those animations are absolutely insane. I can't wait for the next installment. And yeah, that the transitions between dimensions, the score, I mean, it's nuts. And then the honorable mention on the outside looking in is the one that took me by surprise, and that would be The Creator. It was an absolute
really
masterclass, visual masterclass. If you
I had no desire to see The Creator, but I'll add it to the list.
First off, Denzel Washington is my guy, and his son is the main actor, so he ate. He was very, very good. The story was honestly a lot better than I expected. There was an emotional aspect that I did not really expect going into the theater. And the thing that really put it over the top, though, like, the score was all right, but the visuals were nuts. It was very, very visually appealing. So, yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Napoleon can crack the top four. But of the ones you listed, Across the Spider-Verse, the only one I've seen. I love the Spider-Verse series. The first one is like one of my favorite movies ever. Thought the second one was really good too. I still need to see Oppenheimer, and I've heard such good things about it. Yeah, the other movies, I mean, where would Barbie rank on it?
Barbie's top like eight, but that's okay. Just because, dude, I watch like, I think I've already seen like 33 movies this year, so it's like so hard to deliberate. Like, I mean, Air was incredible. I don't know if you saw Air.
I liked Air. Yeah, I liked Air.
There's just like The Covenant was a pretty good film. There's been a lot of sleepers too. Like, I'm not going to lie, this might sound so childish. That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie was a banger. I'm not going to lie. Listen, I've got the Napoleon seats reserved, man. Next Saturday, 3 p.m. It's going to be a time. I'm excited. I love Ridley Scott. And I love Joaquin Phoenix, so.
And I love that they're not even attempting any French accents or anything.
Yeah, they're just like, yeah. And then, you know, God, it's going to be interesting, man. It's like the year of the biopic, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Good point. All right, well, let's close it down, man. We will we'll see y'all early next week. Probably with a guest. I'm going to tease that. It's a guest that most UNC fans will be excited to hear. And yeah, we'll be breaking down Atlantis and previewing that, giving some bold predictions. So stay tuned with The Pod Is the Roof. Follow us on Twitter if you don't already. We're out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.